Okay, so we're going to learn a piece from the Mayan Beis HaShoeva from Rav Schwab on Parshas Emor. The reason why we're going to do that is because Emor is the Parsha that deals with the Yom Tovim, and specifically the Sfira, which involves the bringing of the Karban Eimer, and that's why we call it the Sfiras Eimer. We're counting from the Eimer. So let's see exactly what Rav Schwab says about the Eimer and about the Sfira, and we're going to get a lot of Yesidus out of this tonight, Amir Tzashem. So the Medrash, Rabbi Yechanan Eimer, Alti Mitzvah Ha'Eimer Kala Be'Necha. Don't make the Mitzvah Ha'Eimer light in your eyes. Don't think that the Mitzvah Ha'Eimer is like a small, non-substantial mitzvah. Shal Yidei Mitzvah Ha'Eimer, because through the Mitzvah Ha'Eimer, Zacha Avram, Lirashis Eretz Kanan. Avram Avinu is Zeicha to Yarshin Eretz Kanan. The reason why we have Eretz Yisrael is because of the mitzvah of Eimer. Ha'adah Duchsiv, V'nasati L'cho L'zaracha Acharecha. I'm going to give it to you and to your children after. Amenas V'atas Brisi Tishmar. Because of what? What do you have to do to get the land? What's the covenant? The covenant is Ve'eza ze mitzvah sa'aymer. You know what the covenant that Avraham Avinu was supposed to keep was in order to do his part of the bargain to keep Eretz Yisrael, to get Eretz Yisrael, to Yarshin Eretz Yisrael? It's to keep the mitzvah of Eimer. So we see that this, the mitzvah of Eimer, of the Karban Eimer, is a very important, very substantial mitzvah. Rav Shim ben Lakish Amar, La'olam al tei mitzvah sa'aymer kala be'necha. I'll give you another reason why it shouldn't be so light in your eyes. Because of the mitzvah of Eimer, Hashem made peace between a man and his wife. Whoever is learning Daf Yomi is in the thick of the sugyas of Masechta Saita, dealing with the Mincha Saita. If a woman is suspected of being unfaithful to her husband, so, and under certain circumstances, Hashem has to warn her, don't be miyachid with this person. And then if she is miyachid with a person, there's edim. So what happens is she has to undergo a process where she drinks a certain potion containing a worn out Megillah of Saita, and she drinks that. And if she's innocent, then she's fine. If she's guilty, then she will explode, either immediately or we give her some time. But this point, the point of this mitzvah of Mincha Saita, is to ultimately bring peace between man and his wife. V'tzarech bir shayches mitzvah saim lebris hanemeres b'mila ulemincha saita. So we have to understand, says Rav Schwab, this medrash seems very cryptic. What in the world does the mitzvah of Eimer have to do with A, the bris that was given between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram, which is Pashas the Bris Mila? What does that have to do with Eimer? And also, what does it have to do with Mincha Saita? What is the connection between these two things? And it seems that they're all somehow lumped together in this Mishnah, in this Medrash. So, Hine Minchas Eimer Ba Minas Eirim. As we know, Minchas Ha'Eimer that you bring on the second day of Pesach comes from Sa'irim. It comes from barley. Shum Maichel Behema. We know that who eats barley? We don't really eat barley. We eat more wheat. True, you could eat barley. You know, we eat barley sometimes. But the main consumer of barley are animals. It's considered to be a Maichel Behema. L'hayreis Shayideh Kitzira L'shma to teach you that if you do things right, if you're harvesting the Eimer l'shem shamayim, and you sift it with 13 filterings, so then you're able to be makriv even a meichel beima, even what is animal fodder that could go. Animal feed could also be put on top of the Mizbeach of Hashem. The way Rav Schwab understands this is that by the Torah telling you that you should be bringing a carbon omer, which is the meichel behema, you're bringing animal feed on top of mizbeach through processing it. You take raw barley and then you cut it l'shem shamayim, you cut it for kedusha purposes, and then you your menapet yud gimel siftings, 13 siftings one after another. Then, even though it's meichel behema, it could still be uplifted and elevated to the madrega that it becomes reach nichayach l'shem. And if that's the case, then we ourselves who have a nefesh bahamis, what does that mean? We have a nefesh, we have a soul, but the soul sometimes is a nefesh bahamis. It's like an animalistic soul, which means that it has taivas and it has all types of interests that are not necessarily kedusha interests. We're physical beings and we have physical needs and we have yearnings and we have cravings and we have all types of human requirements and desire. So sometimes we look in the mirror and we say, like, who am I to be considered holy? I'm not holy. I have so many taivas. We see from the Karban HaOmer, which is also a Meichel Behema, that even what's Meichel Behema, if you work hard enough at it and you really purify it, it could be brought onto the Mizbeach of Hashem, which is a very, very important lesson for us. That means that we're all worthy through the process of becoming a Ben Torah to really attain unparalleled heights in Kedusha, even though we are physical and we do have taibis, and that's part of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu built us. Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we think that I have such a big Yetzirah and I have such taibis and, you know, who am I? I'm a bum and I'm a... What are you talking about? Hashem made you this way. You didn't ask. You didn't volunteer and say, hey, I'd really like a nefesh bahami. We were all given this nefesh bahami. We were given a Yetzirah. So, and Hashem ki hu yad, like we say in Yom Ne'eram Davening, ki hu yada yitzreinu. No, we say it every day by Tachan, actually. We haven't been saying it for a long time, so I forgot. But ki hu yada yitzreinu, he knows our Yetzirah. Zachar ki afranach, remember that we're just us. We're human. You created us human. Now that doesn't absolve us of doing mitzvahs. It doesn't absolve us of trying to tame the Yetzirah. And that's why we're here. We're here to work on it and to improve it and to sift it and to perfect it. But it's very understandable that we have those taivas to begin with because we are human. Hashem made us this way. And Hashem says, okay, now I want you to raise yourself. I made you with a nefesh bami, with taivas, with the Yetzirah, but now I want you to work hard on uplifting yourself. The inyan ze yafetz ar lahavin divrei chachamim al pasuk shiva shivas tisbilcha mehachel chermesh bakama tachel lispar. So it says that 7 weeks, this is a pasuk later on in Parshas Re'eh, and it says that for 7 weeks you should count, which is what we're doing during this period of time, from the time that the chermesh, from the time that the wheat was standing, you should start to count. Al tukri bakama ela bakaima. And we darshan from there that you shouldn't read it bekama, but rather bekaimash. You have to stand. If you ever, you know, you're sitting and you say, oh my gosh, I have to count sira. I forgot to count sira. Don't count sitting. The halacha is you must count sira saimer standing. How do you know that? Because it's darshan from this pasuk. Bekama, al tikri bekama ela bekaima. Pirush, shanu mishum lekama shalsam. We are like a stalk of grain, of barley. Besad out in the field. Vishas kim sfiras mitzvah sfiras aimer ki ilu anu niktsar menakarka. And when there's the mitzvah sfira, if we are like, meaning obviously we're compared to the aimer, because if the, just like the wheat is standing, we're supposed to stand, that means that there's some equivalence between us and a stalk of wheat. And just like a stalk of wheat, it's cut down by the, on the second day of Pesach, we're also, in a sense, harvested from the land, from the ground. Just like the wheat, the grain, the barley, had to be uprooted from the ground, what does the ground represent? If I would ask you, what does the ground represent? Represents chumrius, it represents being earthly, being very base, being coarse. That's where we come from. We come from the afar, that's coarse. And we are supposed to uproot ourselves from that existence. And by doing so, we will share the same fate as the Eimer. The Eimer was put on the Mizbeach, and we're going to be elevated on the Mizbeach. We have to uplift ourselves from the ground. Try to detach ourselves from the worldliness, the earthliness that we are entrenched in. The Yala Mala Lias Merkaba Lelakusa Yisbarach. Ubay Sirasa Bachalila, every night as we count, Yas Malibali Natik Meart Siusa, Yaser Yaser, Lias Muchan Kabbalah Satar Karoi. What are we supposed to be thinking about when we count? There's so many Kabbanis. It's a very Kabbalistic endeavor, right? Counting. There's all these spheres. There's nothing more, you know, that gets Makubalam more excited than a sphere, than spheres, right? How many spheres are there?
Yeah. Well, it was last week. It only updates after Yeshiva Marv, so it'll be updated tonight.
Yeah, so what's this week? This week is what?
Whatever the article Sephardi Siddur says.
Okay, so anyway, there's a lot of spheres. There's Gevura, and there's Chesed, and there's Malchus, and there's Hayd. Every single one of these different spheres, which I admittedly know nothing about, but there is a great depth to each and every one of these spheres. And so there's a lot of kabbalas. When people count sphera, a lot of them get very into it, and they mark exactly, you know, what it is, and if it's chesed shebegvura or gvura shebemalchus or whatever. Everyone has its own count and its own flavor and its own unique mission of the day. And that mission is supposed to elevate us on a higher plane. Every single night as we count, we're getting closer to Kabbalah Satayr, we're getting closer to elevating our souls to higher and higher and higher spheres, higher counts. You want to tell us what tonight is?
Do
last night, maybe.
Oh, last night is Yesod Shebegvura, so that would be accurate.
Okay. V'zeu Adimin Linin Mitzvos Mila, Shu Chaisem Ais Bris Kaidesh. This is what the essence of Bris Mila is all about. What is a Bris Mila? It's a chaisem eispris kaidish. It's a stamp. It's a seal of holiness. B'makam makara taiva abamis. Where is it? Where is the makar? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made the makam amila on our nose. Could have made the makam amila on our ear. Cut off a piece of your ear and that'll be the bris. Why did he specifically choose the makam amila to be in the makam, in the makar taiva? Why is that? That's the epicenter of taiva and bahamis. Animalistic, pull is all coming from that makam. Why would Hashem make it there? And our bodies become sanctified dafka that way. I'm going to give you Eretz Kanan. Dafka b'shah shetzival bris mila. When did he tell us this? He told Avram that we're getting Eretz Canaan at the point that he was mitzavim to be mal himself. We see there's some correlation here. Why? Mishum sheb Eretz Canaan sholta hanefesh habahamis. Because in Eretz Canaan, that's where the nefesh habahamis exists, and it's overpowering. Kedachsiv kemaiseres v'shem kemaiseres kanan leisasu. What was Eretz Canaan before the Jews moved in? Before the Jews moved in, it was a terrible place. It was like it was full of taiva, and it was like Kemais Eretz Mitzrayim, Kemais Eretz Canaan. Eretz Canaan was a place of great decadence. V'rakshah HaKadosh Baruch Hu kidsha be'esek kedushas, ashein b'ayim kedusha l'malamen, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the land, he purified it. He put it into like a spin cycle, a spiritual spin cycle, 10 cycles, one after another, until it was finally Niskadish. And then, only then, Atshem Ba'am Kusha Dugma Sin Bris Mila B'Guf Adam. So it's very similar to the Bris Mila and the Guf Adam. Just like the Bris is in the Makam of Taiva, you took the lowliest part of the body, and that's where I want you to work on. That's where I want you to make a Bris and to circumcise yourself so that your Taivas are curbed. That's what Eretz Yisrael is also. The Bris of giving us Eretz Yisrael, the relationship is very clear. Because just like the Bris of the body, you're sanctifying your body through curbing that makim of Mila, so too, when I'm giving you Eretz Canaan, which was a very decadent land, you have to work on it. And you're working on it together with the Rabbeinu Shalom to be Mekadesh it and to, but otherwise, if you're not working on it, then it could be a very Tamei Diga thing. People don't understand that. People think, I'm going to Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to learn there, and I'm going to be a tzaddik. That's true. That's a good plan. But very often, and we see this a lot, that if you're not careful in Eretz Yisrael, you could slip very easily also. There's a lot of people that go to Eretz Yisrael and they fail, and they do all types of averis, and they become, you know, they become extremely decadent. Much more than they were in America even. And the reason for that is because it's a place that inherently could go very bad. It's a place of, I don't want to say tumah, but the historical, you know, makar, just like the Bris Milah is also, it's in a place that has great potential of tumah. You have to work on it. Eretz Yisrael is like that as well. And there's a reason for that. Not coincidence. It sounds strange. Like, oh, Eretz Yisrael, is it holy or is it not? It's specifically places that are the holiest that have the most potential to fall and to become tamei. And the reverse is true also. The places that are the most tamei have great potential for Tara. It's something called Zel Uma Zel Salikim. Hashem gave a balance between Kedusha and Tuma, between things that are very holy and things that are very chayil. And we have to understand that. So in Eretz Yisrael, I could be very holy or I could be the opposite. You want to use the Bris, you could use the Bris for the holiest of things. You could also use the Makam HaMila for terrible things. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that with Kavana, and it's on purpose, and it's our job to make sure to work very hard on exploiting these mitzvahs, because there's great potential to really make yourself great. Precisely when a person has a taiva for doing an avera with the makam amila, that's exact. And you're minea, you stop yourself from doing that. That's where the greatest kedusha lies. The greatest kedusha lies in when you, like the Ramban says at the beginning of Parashat Kedoshim, that Kedoshim to you, Rashi really says, what the Ramban elaborates on it, is Prushim to you. How do you get holy? You get holy by being Pirish from Arayas. When you give in to Arayas, Tame. When you're Pirish, when you have the opportunity to do something and you don't, you get extremely holy, like Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik came this close to being Nichshol in a terrible Avera, and from there on, he became Yosef HaTzadik. How many people do we call a tzaddik in Jewish history? Not too many, right? Who do we call a tzaddik? I don't know if, who? Noach was a tzaddik. Who else? What?
Big tzaddik.
Big tzaddik, right? Who else? Who? Shimon HaTzaddik, very good. It's interesting, the Rambam calls Yaakov a tzaddik. Right? He says Yaakov HaTzadik, that he was very meticulous, he was very ethical and honest, he didn't cheat, he worked very hard, he gave it his all. Very funny that the Rambam used the Lashon by Yitzchak of a Tzadik. Who else is called a Tzadik in the Torah? What? Mordechai. Yeshivas Mordechai HaTzadik. But is that a Lashon? Is that from the Megillah? Does it say that? Is it called him a Tzadik in the Megillah? I don't think so. I'm not sure, but I know Chazal, I think, do call him a tzaddik. Who? That's true. That's true. We right, but it became part of. We call it very good. That's true. We call him Yisrael Tzaddik. Who else is called a tzaddik? I think was Eev called? Was Eev called a tzaddik? I think Eev might have been called a tzaddik at the beginning of Sefer Eev. Anyway, but it's not too many. You can count on one or two hands how many people are called a tzaddik. And there's Binyamin HaTzaddik, right? I think in Maseches Tainis. Anyway, but there's not too many people in Judah. So Yosef was a tzaddik. You know why he was a tzaddik? Because he came this close to doing an Aveira and he stopped. By Yimayim. Stop. If a person is able to hold back from doing these types of Aveiras, so that in that then the bris, the covenant between you and the Rebbein Shalom gets very strong. And it's very difficult. It's a very difficult nisayin that people have in this day and age, and probably that always had, but today it's much more pronounced because of technology and because of the accessibility of all these things. And Shmir Sinayim became an extremely difficult nisayin for people. But if you're able to be oyem b'nisayin, and we all have to, and if you're successful at it, or you're more successful than not at it, nobody is maybe perfect, but you really, if you're successful, you know, and you really are trying and you're focused on trying, it's tremendous. The amount of kedusha that's attainable by that is off the charts. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Mila Dafka there, the bris between us and him Dafka there, because he understands that there's a taiva there. And if you're able to be perished from that taiva, you will attain Kedusha. You will be Daim L'Shechina. And that's why Eretz Yisrael is like that. So that's Shayach to the mitzvah of Aymer, because the mitzvah of Aymer, again, is taking the animalistic drive and bringing it up on the Mizbeach. So that's what the zeschus of the Mila is connected to it. And the last piece of the puzzle is the Mincha Saita. V'chein in Mincha Saita Abba Min HaSayim also comes from barley. V'yamru Chazal Shekashem Shemaaseh HaMais V'yam. This Saita, who was promiscuous and she was misyachid with a man, that's not debatable. We know that she was miyachid, and we don't know what they did necessarily behind closed doors, but it didn't look good, and she did a Maisa Behema. That's why we prescribe for her a carbon which is made of sirim, which is animal feed. The Eina Kavana says Rav Schwab Shasa Mais Vema Kishazinsa, Shari Ikra Carbon Lasa Shomini Shlish. It doesn't mean that she did a Mais Vema by actually being Mizana. We don't know that. That's what we're questioning. That's what we're trying to examine by this Bidika, by this process of Mesaita. And it's supposed to bring peace between the husband and wife. We're hoping that she passes with flying colors and she's able to go back to her husband and live together again. Then she'll explode. So the main point of the carbon is not, you know, people think, I know what the carbon is. The carbon is to make her explode. No, it's not. The carbon is to avoid her exploding. The carbon is trying to be mevarer, to ascertain beyond any shadow of a doubt that she's innocent. She did not do what you suspected her of doing. It didn't, you know, she should have been more careful. The optics definitely weren't good, but we're trying to determine through the Meisaita that she's innocent so that she could go back home. She could live with her husband again, B'Shalom. So the carbon is really to determine that she was not Mizana. So what does it mean that she did a Maisa Behema? She acted immorally. She was very she was acting in an inappropriate manner. She didn't stop herself. Her husband warned her, I do not want you to be Mesiacha with this man. And guess what she did? She went and she was disloyal and she went and she did it. So she acted with pretzes. That's what the Maisa Beim was. Wasn't the Maisa Beim was not that we're actually assuming that she was Mizan, we're hoping that she wasn't. But the Maisa Behema was the fact that she flirted with immorality. Whatever she did in the end, we don't know. That's what we're going to find out. Uvahavas ha-karban mincha, niskapra, v'nis'alsam ma'asava ha-bahami, ash nisparcha b'v'nikza b'nizra zera. And by bringing the carbon, she will be blessed. If she passes this test, she will be, the Gemara says amazing things, that if she passes the test, if she used to be, you know, giving birth to children that were not so good looking, suddenly now she's going to have beautiful children. And if she, you know, and all types of other brachas that accrue to this woman, how does that happen? What's the bracha? She did bad. I mean, she, even if she was innocent, but she was really guilty in the process of what she did. How could, meaning, even if she wasn't mezana, but how could she have been mesiachid? What's the answer? The answer is, sheminatekes es atzmana bahamius. If she's able, yes, she was acting like a behema, but if she's able to now withdraw from that and run away from that, yecholis kadesh lalis l'rotz and l'reach nicheich Hashem. She has every opportunity now to turn the ship around and to bring herself up on the mizbeach, to take something that's a meichel behema and to elevate it to a kedusha standard and to a kedusha status. Ki kesheein shlitas hanefesh avamis, ki misal liyes makam lashras hashchina. When you're not giving in to the nefesh, yes, you have a nefesh behami, and you know you think, well, I have a nefesh behami, so I'll give in to it. You could do that. You have the bechira to do that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to push back against that notion that we are behema. You know, that's what if you read the writings of Hitler Yimach Shemai. So one of the things that he was very proud of was the fact that he says, you know, the world, you know, it calls us barbarians. You know, we, you know, because he writes about it. Right? He doesn't care about killing millions of people. That was his plan. He says, yes, we're barbarians. We're behemoths, and we're proud of it. A yid can't understand that concept, because a yid understands that whatever we are, even if we have a nefesh bahami, our job in life is to uplift ourselves, to raise ourselves into human beings, to raise ourselves into malachim from the animalistic drives that we have. But Goyim, many Goyim, they don't have that conscience. Hitler said that, Yimach Shemai said that the Jews cursed the world with a conscience. That's true. Imagine without the Jews, without the Torah in the world. The world wouldn't exist, because there'd be no purpose of the world. Chazal say, and you know, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes about this extensively, how if nobody would be learning in the world Torah for a second, the world would explode. There will be no world. The world needs Torah to constantly, and that's why they say there's day and night, you know, different time zones. If it's night here, it's day in Eretz Yisrael, because who knows, you know, maybe nobody's learning, and, you know, it's hard to imagine today, but you go back 100 years in America, 100 years ago, you know, I don't know how many people were learning Torah 150 years ago in America, very few, if any. So, you know, you have to make sure that there's always going to be people learning at any time of the day. So Hashem made time zones. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world that there's day and night in different parts of the world at the same time. But this is, you know, something that if the world wouldn't have Torah in it, then it would. But let's say, for argument's sake, that the world could exist without Jews, without the Torah. What would the world look like? How would the world? There would be no conscience. Even like Christians and whoever claims that they have some morality and they have some ethics, and it's all from the Torah. It's all in all of these concepts about not to murder and not to steal and not, all these are all Jewish concepts. These are all from the Torah. So if the world would not have a Torah, for the world, they would be, everyone would be just acting like behemoths. There'd be really no difference between, you know, two-legged behemoths and four-legged behemoths. It would be all the same. You just follow your taivas. And it seems very geschmack sometimes. That's what, you know, people that all they do all day is give in to their yetzaras, give in to their taivas. It sounds geschmack, but it's not. That's not your purpose in life, to give in. The purpose of a Jew's life is to push back against that nefesh habahami and to uplift ourselves until we're on the mizbeach of Hashem. So this is such a critical yisayda that Rosh Chodesh is teaching us, that you have to be able, a saita. She started off with Michael Behema, but she could be great again. She could elevate herself by controlling her nefesh abami, uplift herself to Hashras HaShchina, and have her husband and her once again, Ish V'Isha, Shchina Shriya B'Neim. if there's zeicha. V'im kein gam ha'inyan shel. Second. I didn't make that loud. Minchas Aimer, Daimlas Skulas, Minchas Saita. So the Minchas Aimer is very similar to the school of Minchas Saita, Haba, Minasarim, Kanal, and Mubanim Dibraham Medrash. So Shvab brilliantly explains the connection in this Medrash between the Minchas Aimer, which is really the linchpin, the Minchas Aimer, in understanding how the bris of Avram Avinu to get Eretz Yisrael worked, and also how it works with the Minchas Saita. It's all one. Because the purpose of the Karban Aimer and what we're doing during these 7 weeks now is every day elevating ourselves, hopefully, higher and higher, pushing back against the Nefesh HaBahami. You know, this is a time of year that I think, you know, people have a very hard time with Taivas. It's, you know, a few people came over to me already since the beginning of the Zman and told me that, you know, they've had issues with Taivas, you know, over Pesach and over Slapashas because we're home, we're not in yeshiva, it's more difficult, but it's also this time of year, you know, it's spring, people are doing, you know, it's the weather is more, people start having Taivas more. That's not coincidental, because if we're going to be able to really maximize our Kedusha, which is the point of these spheres of these 7 weeks, then it has to be a struggle. And it is a struggle, but we can't give in to the struggle. We have to really try our best. It's hard, very difficult, you know, very, very hard to be a bacher, to be anybody in this day and age. But the more that you're able to be shaylate over the behema within, the more kedusha you'll be able to find. People there are people that are mamish, you know, miskaber over these taivas, and they find that there is a direct correlation between being able to be strong against the Yetzirah, and then being able to learn very well. There's a connection between them. In fact, the Rambam says that ein machsheves arayis, that the when a person has hirhurei aveira in his mind, these fantasies that come into his mind, it's only matzli b'misha what? Lay panim in a chachma, excellent. By somebody that has a heart that's vacuous of chachma, chachma sa taira. When we're not learning taira, then you have to be very careful because the mind then fills with all types of junk. And when we are learning taira, that stops. It's very hard. If a person's really shaku and learning, very hard to imagine that such a person would be able to go back to the dorm and do something crazy because, you know, his mind is saturated with Rashbas and Ritvas and Mishnah Berurahs and Misos Yisharim, so it's hard to say, how would that happen? But if you're not ligging and learning, if your mind is not obsessed and consumed with learning, very easy. Your mind is empty of learning, then into that abyss, into that vacuum, will jump the Yetzirah. So these are very important. You say this is the time right now to work on this, during the spheres, to push back against the Nefesh HaBahami, against the Yetzirah, and to go from Pesach, which was when we brought the Karban Aimer, which is Sa'irim, and we're going to end up on Shavuos bringing what? The Shtei HaLechem. What was the Shtei HaLechem made of? Chita, wheat, because that is the evolution of man. We go from, in a way, Darwin wasn't wrong. He said that man, you know, comes from an animal. We evolved from animals. He's not wrong. You know, that's true. In a sense, we are. You know, he was wrong in the, perhaps in the, you know, in the physical realities that he painted, but in a sense, we do come from animals. We have an animal within. We have a Nefesh Bahami. And we're supposed to evolve ourselves and become human, become moral, become ethical, become elevated people. And it's interesting, you know, that we were talking about what the Tsar Ayudim was speaking about, how proud he was of being a barbarian. And he says, this is our pride and our sword and our, he said specifically in that very speech, he said that the Jews, you know, destroyed their body with circumcision. And, you know, and he says, and we, you know, we're proud of our body. He's not just giving like a Musar Shmuz to us. He's right. He was right. without Torah, without Kedusha, without mitzvahs, we would be behemoths. We'd be animals. In fact, I think it was the Kleisenberger Rebbe, who was, you know, the Nazis were like pummeling the Yidden, and they were on the floor, and there was a Jew that was lying next to the blue, I think it was the Kleisenberger. And he says, Rabbi, are you going to still say Atav Achartan Mikal Amim? You still think that, you know, we're the chosen nation? Look at us. We're on the floor. We're being beaten by, you know, by Nazis. We're like, where's our God? Doesn't seem to be around. Are we, this is the chosen nation? You're going to still say Atav Achartanu? So the Kleisenberger Rebbe said, I'm going to say it now with much bigger kavana, greater kavana than I ever had. Because I thank God for making me, if I wasn't the chosen nation, I'd be them. I don't want to be them. That doesn't interest me. He says, this is chosenness. Chosenness is to be human. And so what we're doing with our lives, and specifically during the Maya Sfira, is we're trying to humanize ourselves. We're trying to push away from that instinctive animal and doing what we want, when we want, on our terms, and like just giving in without any conscience, without any guilt, without any remorse. That's not what a Ben Torah, what a Yid is supposed to be. A Yid is supposed to be somebody that goes and evolves from Pesach to Shavuos, from the Sa'arim to the Chitim, from the Maichal Behema to the Maichal Adam. And amidst Hashem, every day, one day at a time, we will count the Sfira and we will make these days count. Thank you. Okay.